Hillary and Eleanor, 16, Concrete. Eleanor Roosevelt woke up in a hotel room fogged in by Sydney Harbour. Fogged in too and infinitely harbour lost, Hillary Clinton leaned above her. The fog had penetrated somehow, tactile as wax, as it must, Eleanor decided, often do here in Sydney. It was a place she confessed she never wanted much to visit, but before it successfully vanished, the water below had twinkled finely in parlour China's Asia like Hillary's quick eyes. Hillary had been speaking with Julia on a platform on feminism starrily, but by now Eleanor wasn't relaxed enough to be jealous. The memory of Libya still made her lose her breakfast, how Hillary showed pleasure at the murder of Gaddafi by that sodomizing knife. The empire's right to disembowel small nations opposed to the dollar made her tone cute, as if a uniformed, uninformed, unformed father were approving every loyal word she said. Said Eleanor, "You know, the thing that seemed to me to be the obvious, to be obviouser, is that Julia now works for the Brookings. You know, dear, I've always thought Brookings could be a commoner noun and mean activities that seemed smoother than others that the right wing has on offer. I mean, a Brooking could be anti-racial, or a belief in educating women, or that gender persecution and pollution are all wrong. Whoever wouldn't belong, when you can brook forever. And in the meantime, young lady, whatever do you want to confess about concrete chairs in Syria? My God, Eleanor, is that why you're back here? You're like the hound of heaven, bitch rather, but you're a dear old dog anyway, like an old lover. When you're not here, my conscience freezes over. The company was called Lafarge, and what could be Frencher than a concrete firm supplying Daesh to fight Assad there? And yes, I do have shares in it, but fighting Russia is real for me like Hitler was to you, even if I never minded selling them uranium. Their air force is much riskier." At the window in the nacreous sweet vapour, she had worked herself through flirting mischief to a deeper whimsy about her speech's contradictions, rested her small, still, smooth hand on Eleanor's, each polished finger tighter than the one before, until her grip closed tighter than Franklin's on the wheelchair. Eleanor could remember when he'd smile in a meeting, pretend it wasn't there. But she admitted, "Hillary, dearest, you need me, I am here." Hillary knelt on the floor, head on Eleanor's lap that was older than some attic grandmother's, in a way that any ancestor might have found appropriate with an American confessor. So she murmured, "I didn't murder Seth Rich, however. I really did believe for a while that it was Russia who hacked the Democratic Party, not some protester from within attempting revenge for Bernie Sanders. Although I suppose that never quite fitted my idea that hacking should be treated as treason. You were so sure you could abandon me that I was a survivor. Or maybe you didn't care? Wherever you were, in the arms of some ex-bodyguard or other, you thought I could tumble hellward and America. Did you think I could be as true as this with Julia?" Eleanor thought of the Malaysian solution, the desire to attack Assange, unquestion Israel, cut the single mother pension, other strict stances of a stingy nature, all brooking now with researcher's sanctity. "I would never," she relented, "abandon you to such a platform. Her hair is very Anne of Green Gables, though, and she has the quiver of a hopeful strawberry schoolgirl in her smile. Could I ever compete with that style? You know, I'm even sensitiver about my looks as the centuries roll on." The human answer reassured Hillary, and the flirtatious humility, security, flutter of dove, calm peace in her own position. "Help me about Russia, dear," she implored at last in a crisp, defeated whisper.